This week on Thinking Inside the Box, we sleuth the slopes in Dark Summit. Hello, everybody. I'm Excalibur.
And I'm your co-host, Soft Mike.
All right. What do we have today, sir?
We have Dark Summit, a snowboarding genre game.
Oh, yes. Definitely an interesting one, too, with quite the twist. An actual story.
Yes, of interesting gameplay that it presented a unique scenario that's reminiscent to me of the Tony Hawk series in a way.
Yeah, I can agree in a way. From everything I've read, they do hearken this game to Tony Hawk-ness, even somewhat to the likes of SSX. So to be referenced as a likeness to those two definitely speaks measures for how well this game was done.
That's definitely a good point.
Yeah, it says a lot about the game. I definitely enjoyed my experience for the most part. Found it to actually be an enjoyable game. It seemed to be along the lines of maybe even a hidden gem. I think it slightly falls short of the hidden gem category, though, like barely, but it's right there.
Yeah, I agree. There is a charm to this game that really has never been discussed or has kind of been brought up. I don't think anyone really knows the sort of underlying potential this game had.
Yeah, it definitely had a lot of potential. We kind of described it as a jack-of-all-trades game. It didn't do everything awesome, but it did everything good.
Yes.
So, let's jump right in.
All right.
This game is Dark Summit, developed by Radical Entertainment, published by THQ. It is a single-player and multiplayer game. It is rated T for teen for comic mischief and mild language. It is a sports alternative snowboarding genre. Released November 12th, 2001, for the GameCube, PlayStation 2, and the Xbox. And the overview is, uncover the mystery atop Mount Garrick. The military has mysteriously closed the summit, and the evil chief O'Leary is trying desperately to drive boarders off the mountain. Do you have what it takes to explore this vast terrain and expose the conspiracy shrouded at the summit? With unique, groundbreaking game design, Dark Summit is the only action-adventure snowboarding game with mission-based objectives and compelling storyline.
Very good. The description is very similar. The military has mysteriously closed the summit of Mount Garrick, and Chief O'Leary is trying to desperately drive snowboarders off the mountain. Dark Summit is a twist on the snowboarding genre. Instead of trying to pull off insane tricks, you'll be completing various missions, such as find the bomb and destroy the cannon. Pulling off tricks earns you points to buy new equipment.
It's a pretty cool concept, the way that they set it up.
But you have to admit, they could have done more.
Yeah, there is a couple things that we can critique. Definitely, for sure.
All right, so I'll start with telling you who our publisher is. And it's a very well-known brand, THQ. Now, THQ is a large developer and publisher of games. THQ is short for Toy Headquarters. It's originally founded as Trinity Acquisition Corporation in New York, USA in 1989. The company was reincorporated in Delaware in 1997 after the name had previously been changed to THQ Incorporated in 1991 through a merger with THQ, a California corporation. Initially, the company's focus was a toy manufacturer. However, in 1994, THQ began to focus exclusively on the development and publishing of video games. Based in the USA, the company maintained offices in Europe and Asia Pacific. In December 2012, the company filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy, and on January 22, 2013, almost all studios and properties were sold off in an auction. The remaining staff was laid off, and during its existence, the company acquired and established many studios. So, just a few to name off here. There's Locomotive Games. We have Sandblast Games, Chaos Studios, Mass Media, Big Huge Games are some of the companies that they've closed or lost by acquisition or founding them. The company was also involved with games for mobile platforms under the THQ Wireless brand, which was founded in 2001. And in February 2011, THQ reported to have sold the mobile division to advertising and distribution firm 24MAS. When closed in January 2013, the following studios that they founded or acquired were still active. Volition, Relic Entertainment, that's a really big one, Vigil Games, Elephant Entertainment, THQ Studio Montreal. The company also held a minority interest in the Japanese studio Yuxco, and the following games, properties, or publishing rights were also sold, which would be the Evolve IP and WWE games to the Take-Two company, the Homefront IP to Crytek, the Metro IP to Koch Media, and South Park The Stick of Truth to Ubisoft. Just a little fun fact, THQ initially had their name spelled T with a star between the H and the T. So it said like THQ. Some trivia for THQ is the German online magazine 4Players named THQ as the number 3 best developer of 2004. So that is all I have for THQ.
Interesting. Very cool stuff about the publisher. THQ was pretty prominent. Late 90s, early to mid 2000s, you saw their branding on a lot of games. They always seem to be pretty decent games, and this one makes no exception to that list either. So yes. It's kind of sad to see that they had also vanished, you know, as definitely a strong strong publisher.
Well, that's a developer / publisher, so I guess technically, yeah.
Yeah, true. So, yeah, it's just another one that fell to the wayside. Crazy how it just happens to almost every studio or, you know, of some kind that we've come across so far. They've either been acquired and become something completely different from what they were, or they just went under, you know, or the studio that is making the game is from another defunct studio. It's crazy how unsecure the industry is. Now we'll go on to the developer of this game, Radical Entertainment. They are a Canadian video game developer based in Vancouver, British Columbia, and a subsidiary of Activision. The studio was founded in 1991 by industry veterans Rory Armies and Dave Davis, as well as newcomer Ian Wilkinson. It is best known for developing 3 games in the Crash Bandicoot franchise and the Prototype series of games, which I haven't played, but they didn't seem like a bad game. On June 28, 2012, due to financial failure of Prototype 2, Radical Entertainment suffered a significant reduction in staff and would from then on focus solely on supporting the other Activision studios while ceasing development on their own projects. Studio head Dr. David Fracchia, I hope I said that right, left the company in May 2014. Radical Entertainment contributed to Destiny also in 2014. Apparently they were just a support team for Bungie, and that was about it. So maybe they were helping develop things or clean stuff up, like a, you know, in an in-process kind of deal. They were probably like contracted to do small stuff for the developer, Bungie.
Yeah.
Maybe even port work, because that does seem to happen sometimes. You know, developer doesn't exactly have anything to do with the game other than help with porting to other consoles or something like that. Another interesting thing about Radical Entertainment is that Ian Wilkinson, Davis, and Armies had previously worked at Vancouver-based Distinctive Software. The studio primarily developed Nintendo Entertainment System ports and adaptations of other video games, peaking at 8 projects in 1994. Mike Ribeiro left his position as Sega of America's Vice President of Sales and Marketing to become CEO of Radical Entertainment in 1996. Between 97 and 98, several employees left the studio to form Barking Dog Studios. So that's pretty big. They must have been doing really well at that time for someone in such a prestigious position to leave and assume the CEO seat of the company.
Yes, it's a lot of faith.
Yeah.
A lot of faith to do that.
Right. Or just a massive pay hike.
Very true.
Another thing is in 2003, Radical Entertainment opened a development division called 369 Interactive, which was set to develop multiple titles based on the CSI franchise in partnership with Ubisoft. Although Radical Entertainment developed a few titles for Vivendi Universal Entertainment, the titles gained massive success and warranted the company's interest in the developers. In 2005, Vivendi acquired Radical Entertainment. However, as described by a former developer at Radical, the mood did not change much, and Radical still operated as an independent game developing company after being acquired by Vivendi. Radical began to make many games such as Sacrifice, The World Is Yours, and The Incredible Hulk Ultimate Destruction, while being published under Vivendi's Sierra Entertainment label. Radical was also given the license to continue development of the Crash Bandicoot franchise, which was also published under Sierra's Entertainment. Radical took over the development of Crash Tag Team Racing and Traveler's Tales. Due to the success of Crash Tag Team Racing, Radical started the development of Crash of the Titans and proclaimed that Crash was home at Radical, stating that Radical would develop all further Crash games. The critical and commercial success of the Crash Titans spawned one more sequel, Crash Mind Over Mutant, which managed to both critically beat its predecessor as well as commercially. During the development of Crash Mind Over Mutant, Radical began working on its own first original intellectual property, Prototype. And so starts the series of events that leads to their demise. In 2008, it was announced that Vivendi Games and Activision were to form Activision Blizzard. The merger changed the mood of Radical and made it more like a first-party developer instead of independent. At the time of the merge, Radical was working on three different projects. One was an unnamed project, and the other two were Crash, Mind Over Mutant, and Prototype. After the merge took place, about half of Radical's staff was cut under Activision Blizzard's reconstruction. The results in the cancellation of the unnamed project, while development of the Crash and Prototype were unaffected. As revealed later by a former developer at Radical, the unnamed project was Scarface 2, which had been at development at Radical for over 2 years and had nearly gone gold. The developer stated Activision had canceled the project. Crash Mind Over Mutant was one of the last games to be published under the Sierra Entertainment label, a bit only in Europe, as North American copies used Activision's logo. Nevertheless, Activision themselves is given credit within the video game. Prototype was published through Activision. After the release of Prototype in 2009, Radical did not officially announce any new projects, though it was revealed again by another former developer that Radical was working on another unnamed project, which had been in development for over a year. It seems like they liked wasting their time on projects that weren't going to be able to get passed or greenlighted, and that really hurt them. However, when Radical Entertainment experienced layoffs, which resulted in over 60 people losing jobs, the project Crash Landed was canceled by Activision. In 2019, environment artist Wayne Dalton leaked images of this unannounced project, which was revealed to be a video game tie-in to the canceled Spider-Man film Spider-Man 4. Taking over development from Treyarch at the 2010 Spike Video Game Awards, Radical announced Prototype 2, which was set to be its largest game, incorporating many assets and gameplay mechanics from the canceled Spider-Man 4 game. Then lastly, this is basically where the studio dies. Radical Entertainment released the first details of Prototype 2 in an interview with EGMI. In the same interview, they revealed that they halted the development on an unknown game, possibly the rumored Crash Bandicoot title after the success of Prototype. However, other candidates for the halted game were rumored to be the unknown Spider-Man game, and a Jason Bourne game, which that would have been interesting. This title later revealed to be canceled. In January 2011, an artist posted video footage showing the canceled Jason Bourne game called Treadstone. The game was canceled when the Bourne license was reacquired by Loudlum Entertainment, and then licensed to Electronic Arts. To celebrate the release of Prototype 2, Radical Entertainment revealed that to coincide, they were releasing RadNet. Similar to Call of Duty Elite, RadNet is an online gaming hub. RadNet contained competitive challenges, which in turn gave the player rewards for in-game use, avatar accessories, development videos, and dynamic themes. An iPhone game, ProtoSlice, was also released to coincide with the release of the game. The iPhone app had partial overseen development by Radical, whilst the actual game was not developed by them. Prototype 2 was released in April 2012. It was Radical Entertainment's most successful game launch. The game was well received, with positive reviews on the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360 versions, with the PC release coming to a later date in 2012. The Prototype 2 sales were the highest of games in April of 2012. Globally, Prototype 2 sold less than a million copies in the 2 months following the release. On the 28th of June 2012, Activision announced that Radical Entertainment had seen a significant reduction in staff and that the studio will cease development of its own games going forward, prompting media speculation that the developer had closed. The publisher cited Prototype 2's failure to find a broad commercial audience. as the reason behind Radical's closure. According to Activision, some employees will remain working for Radical Entertainment, supporting their existing Activision publishing projects, thus while keeping the studio active, and it leaves them as a support team. Kind of a lengthy history for both of the companies, and once again, another rocky one as well.
Yeah, there's always that sad, they got washed out.
A lot of these companies were doing great in the 90s. 2000s hit, and they just, it was downhill after that. It was just like the season of acquisition from like 2000 to 2008 for like everybody. Everyone was getting bought, and everyone was just dying out. So yeah, that was an interesting developer. They always had ambitious projects, it seems, and always wanted to do their own thing, and seemed to be very thick-skulled, just stubborn, I guess. And it seems to have partially led to their ultimate demise in the end.
Probably blame a lot of it on the economy at the time.
Yeah, between 08 and 11 was just a bad time in general.
Let's start our first segment.
It's time for the X-Ray, where we dive into the main features and in-depth gameplay.
All right, diving in.
All right, Excalibur, what do you got for us?
So interesting note, starting this game up, it's the first game to actually check your amount of available space before doing anything else. It's kind of...
Yeah, very kinda, cool.
Yeah, it was kind of curious seeing that for the first time. I thought something was wrong with my Xbox. When I started this game up, I was like, what's going on? But then I soon realized that it was just checking the memory. It was just odd to me because no other game so far that I remember, at least, checked to see how much space was left on the hard drive before starting the game. Going forward from there, you see THQ and then Radical Entertainment also coming across the screen. And then after that, a FMV of just a basic rundown of what the game's about. You see the what they call in the game Slow Patrol standing around. You see Chief O'Leary looking at some kind of an infrared camera, and he spots, I guess, what looks like someone looking at him in the dark, and he punches them and they fall to the ground and get knocked out. You see elements of the game cutscenes, actually, where Naya, the main protagonist, is snowboarding down this half pipe looking structure and firing off a ground cannon, which later on in the game they explain. They show what the military's presence is on the mountain, and then it just goes into showing you, you know, a couple of different tricks that you can do, and that's about it. Once that ends, you see the start menu. You can press start as the insignia that is for this game lights a flame in a pretty cool pattern. You go into the main menu, and you have four options. You can play the game, you can practice, you can play multiplayer. If there's another controller plugged in, the option to play multiplayer, which they call head-to-head games, will be highlighted. And then lastly, you have options. And the options, there's not really much to do. You can look at credits or you can change the sound, which really is kind of lackluster because the sound only consists of three different things, and that is music, voices, and sound effects, which I would highly recommend having all three on for the full experience. There's really nothing in this game as far as audio goes that you're going to benefit from not having on. Nothing drowns the other one out. The levels are actually done pretty well. So from there, you can go to start game. You can load game, save game, start a new game, or continue. After that, you're able to check your character selection, see your progress, how many bombs you've picked up, and also go to the equipment hut where you can change your outfit and you can change your board, which between all the things, you can choose 16 different outfits and you can choose four different boards, which the boards we have found help you to go faster. And I believe help you with your maneuvering a little bit too, the better board that you get as you go. Although it doesn't say that the board is better, you just know that it is because you had to earn these points in order to unlock it, which were known as equipment points. So from there, you've got Naya, and if you complete the story, you unlock the additional characters Ty, Sam, Hank, Felix, and Lynn. The story in the game is the exact same for everybody. Not every character has their own story, unfortunately. So you choose your character, and you go into the main selection of where you want to go. Now, when you first start this game, you will have nothing but First Cut, which is the first level you start at. And as you progress, getting lift points, you'll be able to unlock other areas to explore. And also as you progress into the story. Going from there, you have First Cut as the first level, Function Junction, Pipeline, Summit, Helidrop, and Moongate.
Each of these levels that you've described, very unique how it's set up, because the diagram you get for each level, when you select it, it shows it where its rough location is on the mountain. And what's cool is as you advance through the game, you can actually go to the original older levels that you've completed and continue further down the mountain where you've already been if you've been to, like, once you've been through that track. So it's kind of cool that you can actually go down the entire mountain from start to finish by the end of the game.
Yeah, when that was an interesting fact.
Yeah. So the first level you're greeted is called First Cut, and it is sort of just an introduction to the game, showing you you're introduced to the challenges, which there's radio towers throughout the course, and when you go through the challenge barrier, you're then greeted with a Nokia phone popping up on the right with the narrator, who's sort of like a secret sort of like spy, helping Naya uncover the mystery that's behind this whole Mount Garrick conspiracy. And he gives you a objective to do for the challenge. So once you go do the challenge, you're just pretty much learning how the game works. Even though it's a slow start, it does do a good job of showing you all the elements of the game. So the first level, I believe there's like 16 challenges total. So you're going to be still stay busy for quite a while. I think it was at least a couple hours on the first level. And you'll meet characters along the way, like Hans, who's a random NPC skiing person who you'll sort of encounter randomly along the course. You also have a challenge that has to do with you getting back at him. Then you'll meet, I believe the first person you meet is Sam, who takes you to the first bomb. You always meet one of the boarders that is unlockable when it comes time to get a bomb.
Yeah.
So that's how you meet these characters. Other than that, there's really no story behind them. They're just sort of like, they're there snowboarding on that course as well. They're scouting out for the bomb locations.
So, I do want to note, this game doesn't have a tutorial.
Right. There's no control scheme either. You can't look at like what buttons do what. I think it took me forever. It took me quite a few tries to figure out how to do the grinding to get on rails and jib.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't figure out at all. Not one bit. I even looked for a controller diagram and there wasn't such a thing. I had to look through the controls and it didn't even explain like what a jib was or, you know, anything like that. Like the slang that tells you what a certain kind of move or maneuver was. I kind of just had to guess. That's one weak point was there was no tutorial that started you out and like explained thoroughly what the controls were. Because exactly that, when I met that character, Sam, that brought me to the bomb, I kept trying every way I could think of to get on the rail that you have to grind down to grab the first bomb piece. And I just kept having to restart and restart and restart. And I got frustrated to the point that I just, you know, started searching the pause menu to see if there was any kind of controls that could tell me what I was doing wrong.
I feel like this is a one-for-one repeat of exactly what I was doing. I swear to God, I did the same thing you're doing right now, like what you're explaining.
Yeah, it's just kind of sad that they didn't, you know, help you out.
Oh, there's also a cutscene, first time you load up First Cut, where you get to sort of meet Hans and Rachel, who's his sister, and then you get greeted to Chief O'Leary and the Slow Patrol, the Snow Patrol.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the goal of the game is to, at each area of the course, there's secret bombs and challenges you have to complete. When you complete all the challenges, you unlock what's called chair lift points. Yeah, and that's how you unlock the other areas of the mountain course. So you have to be granted permission. This is the way of the game giving you higher access codes to later levels of the game. And that's separate from your equipment points or skill points, which you earn from doing tricks and accomplishing special tricks throughout the course. Throughout the level, there are icons to pick up that can help boost your skill points. And there's also special trick icons you can pick up as well, which allow you to do better special tricks, other ones that you haven't unlocked yet. So you have to sort of play through and find the hidden icons to max out your special trick list, which is really not that many. But
if you think about it, though, all the grabs that you can do, all the special tricks that you can do off of just ramps, and then all of the special tricks that you can do in half pipes only. And there's other tricks too. There actually is a pretty broad selection of tricks.
Yeah. Oh, so the first person you meet for the first bomb is named Ty. Yeah, Sam's like one of the ones you meet at the end. So once you've completed all the challenges or got enough chairlift points to move on to the next level, you then get introduced to the Function Junction, which is kind of cool because you actually have the first multi-path. You can either take a left path or the right path, and it takes you through a completely different course through the level. And each set of those courses have their own challenges. And then, of course, you either land at a location like that's like a base, or you'll land at a chairlift that brought you to the start of the previous level that you've been through. Once you've gotten enough points and you garner through the Function Junction a few times, you can then unlock the pipeline. I believe that's also a dual track.
It's got the same path, but it's just two different sides to it, really.
Yeah.
It's a very, very linear track. It's really just you go straight down for the most part.
Yeah, and it's got a very long half pipe, which has a couple challenges that are attributed to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's almost no challenges on that.
Yeah, I think there was only like six total.
Yeah, very few.
Once you have beaten that area, you're then introduced to the summit location. And the summit location is one of the top level areas.
And that's where you get chased by the chief.
Yes.
All the way down to the base.
Yeah, once you have found the last couple bombs, four out of the five total bombs, the chief then has you race him down the entire mountain. And not just this area, but like all the way to the base at the bottom of the mountain. So you're going to be going through old areas that you visited. So it's like a a 6 minute chase.
It's pretty long. And what's even crazier is he said he was going to order your termination.
Yeah.
Basically, he was going to have you killed. That's pretty dark.
Yeah, because he knows that you're there to uncover their plot. So that's sort of the precursor, the reasoning why he did it, or why he was going to do it.
It's life and death.
So, of course, once you beat him, you read it through a cutscene of him basically admitting his military secret, but all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he gets zapped away, vanishes.
Yeah, and a very very bright flash of light, and this weird whooshing sound.
So it's kind of stunning because you caught off guard, like you didn't expect something like that. So there's got to be something happening as to why that occurred. So you go into the rabbit hole a little more. Once you've beaten the summit zone, you're then introduced to helipad area. So the helipad area it's uncovered in the summit map. You use the cannon to knock the snow off the mountain, causing an avalanche. The snow that falls uncovers the hidden base underneath, allowing you to go to the helipad area. Once you get to the helipad area, you then are greeted with a couple challenges that significantly have ramped up in difficulty, I might add, compared to the previous levels, which one of them is to find a secret entrance to this base, which ends up being a alien moon base half pipe, which you actually get to do tricks all the way down a very short little track. When you come out of it, you are greeted to a challenge called Apocalypse Cow. You have to hit 10 cows to stop them from taking over the world. So kind of a crazy plot there.
That was pretty crazy too.
It's out of nowhere. Aliens.
Yeah. And then, you know, the name of the mission was kind of comical too. The reference that was a throwback to Apocalypse Now with the name Apocalypse Cow. I liked that.
So the final part of the game has you finding the last bomb, and you have to do a bunch of tricks to get inside the head HQ. Once you go into this final level, it is a very gruesomely difficult obstacle course to get from point A to point B, and once you've done it, you beat the game. Now you're here with a cutscene of the bombs that you've collected, detonator being activated to blow them all up, and that's it. Then to the credits scene.
The last cutscene just abruptly ends. It's pretty lackluster.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the ending is completely... The HQ blows up, you're snowboarding away, fade to black, credits roll.
Yeah. One thing that I found pleasing was the credit reel. It looked really cool. It was in the fashion of, like, documents.
Classified documents.
Yeah, all the way from the top to the bottom, you know, it had random little numbers and stuff that made it look like an official classified document. Really neat.
That's it for this game and its story.
Yeah, there wasn't much to the story. They kind of added that as something to have as part of the game. I guess they had to find a way to make the game interesting or to add stuff to it. It couldn't just be about that. And I think they did a good job.
I think so, too. I think it actually was a very well-done game for what I expected from it.
As far as the game goes itself, it was kind of neat how when you started up a section, like a second time, I think it was on the second time you load into First Cut, you start off immediately into a chase. You're getting chased by, I think it was Ranger Dick and... the slow patrol.
Yep.
And you got to evade them by, like, going a certain distance, which was really cool. It's like the environment changed each time you went back. It added a level of realism. And then the multiple choices of paths that you could take that led to different areas, that was also cool. You had a left path and a right path, and sometimes you even had a middle path. There were different areas that you could access by grinding on rails, or what they call jibbing. You also had your pickups throughout the level. You had extra money you could grab in the form of a dollar sign that was just spinning in a circle. It had like a sound to it, an audible cue that let you know what it was, as well as the special tricks that you could collect on your way down the mountain. You could pick those up and unlock special tricks that would help you earn even more points. The ambience, they did a lot of good work with the ambience of the game as you played it, with the music fitting. The music felt really good. It really matched what was going on, and it helped transport you into that reality that you were in, as well as the random NPCs that were running around. You know, they would yell at you, slow down, you don't belong here, find a different area to go to. And then you had your slow patrol that were comical as well. They were very funny as they voiced, you know, don't go looking for the secrets. The cows are perfectly normal. You know, they're like, the cows are perfectly normal. They would just, you know, go around telling you not to look for stuff and ignore anything strange.
Yeah, the echoes too.
Yes, it had everything that was voiced had an echo to it, so it also made you feel like you were there. You know, just everything ambiently added to it, as well as the obstacles, the things that you could hit as you're going down, the destructible objects and environments.
Snowman, snowman I would hit on that first.
Oh, yeah.
You could literally start an avalanche with one snowman.
Yeah, because just the torso would start rolling down and just wreck anything in front of you or around you.
Hans.
Yes.
Definitely the funniest cutscene in the game, in my opinion.
Tell us about that.
Yeah. So in the Function Junction level, there is a part where you meet Hans again, I should say. You're told that he's been making fun of you still after your last encounter. So you get told you have to go knock him over. So you have to ride over to his location. Once you get close, a cutscene triggers where it shows Naya, or whoever border you end up choosing if you decide to get another border, knocking Hans over. When he falls over, he gets, like, put into, like, a V, where, like, his torso is shoved in the snow so hard that his legs are sticking way up, and he has a very thick German accent where he says, "Oh no, you ruined my snowsuit. Boo hoo." Yeah. And his sister Rachel, who's where you get introduced to her, she gets mad all beyond this because she's like, "You don't pick on my little brother." So then you get chased by Rachel. You have to make it all the way to the end of the level, pretty much,
yeah,
to escape her.
Rachel was a challenge.
Yeah. She was fast.
Yeah, she was on you the whole time. If you weren't doing some kind of maneuvers, you were going to get knocked over by her easily, which if you did, there was a cutscene of her dragging you if you got knocked over by her. And then how you came across your missions, too. It was very simply laid out, and I appreciated that because when you're riding down the mountain, you can see clearly a beacon going straight up into the sky, like a light spire that would signify that there's a mission available. And the mission colors changed per level that you were on, but you always knew that you'd completed this mission or challenge because the light spire would be gray after you were done with it, which I liked that. The missions were also pretty funny, the various ones that you could do, namely were... You had to snowboard down to the picnic area and knock Chief O'Leary's giant table-sized turkey off of his table. Yep. And like ruin his lunch to send a message. And then there's another one where you start the mission and the guy that contacts you and lays out your mission, which, funny enough, product placement again in a game. Like Sobe was a product placement in Munch's Odyssey. You have the Nokia phone, the notorious unbreakable Nokia phone, as the cell phone that he's basically calling you on to tell you what your missions are. And it even boldly says underneath it, Nokia. I thought that was pretty funny, and more product placement again in a game. Going on, you had one mission in particular where you had to ski to the outhouse because... In the mission, Hans gave you a chocolate bar that wasn't actually a chocolate bar. It was a laxative bar. And the guy told you you needed to find an outhouse to unload fast or things were going to get messy. So you've got a timer that starts and you've got to make it to the outhouse location, which is marked by the signs on the path that you're skiing down. I thought that was also funny. There's plenty of other missions in the game that have a general theme to them that are pretty cool, and I appreciated that. Yeah, I
remember the cow
bet. Huh?
Remember, I think the narrator made a cow bet once. That was another memorable one. Where he was like, if you make this 8 times combo, I will eat a whole cow.
Yeah.
And when you finish it, he's like, all right, you proved your point. Yes, I'll take a salad. And, bring that whole cow out.
Yep. They had a lot of fun with it. The narration was great, or at least the, you know, the mission objective narration was great. And the way that they laid that out too, it really seemed out of place that there was no tutorial to start the game because everything else was laid out for you. You were literally hand-fed everything you needed to know other than how to actually play the game, because even in the missions, you know, the game would stop or pause essentially and drop down an overlay screen detailing that you could read. Aside from here, it told to you what you were needing to do. And then there was a subsection at the bottom with a hint telling you what to do. So, you know, they laid it all out, but they never gave you a tutorial to even know how to play the game. It just was a little bit of an imbalance there of, I guess, the design or the gameplay. But we were still able to figure it out. It's just... If you're ever going to tackle this game or try and play it, just know, look at the controls because they won't tell you how to play this game. So going on further in detail about the game, Trix had their own special quirks. You want to talk about the Trix?
Sure, yeah. So there was actually a pretty extensive list of Trix. Pretty much any button combo you push, you were doing something new. And the first real trick you really learn how to do is spins. So you can do a whole ton of spins. You can do front flips, back flips, 180, 360, 540, all the way up to 16, 20, if you wanted. Yeah, as long as you can land. Ending. Yeah, you have to, but the trick, obviously, for any trick game, is you have to do a trick while landing it in order to actually attain the points for it. That's one set of tricks. Then you have your grab tricks, which were, you had 9 total grabs you could do. which you could also combo that with spins. If you wanted to do a front flip while doing a grab, you could do it, and it gave you a whole bunch of points for doing so. The other set of tricks you can do were based on grinds. So while you were jibbing, you could do manuals, or you could do like back manuals where you were going, you know, forward or backward on your board while you were grinding. You could also do directional grinding, where you could hop between different sections on the rails to keep a higher combo going until you landed. You could also do special tricks, which, as we detailed a little bit, that you have to collect icons for in order to unlock their abilities, which you would see tricks like the Misty Flip, and there was like a Hard Kick 180. Yeah. That was like a junction to a 180, 540 invert, something like that. It was crazy. You know, a lot of these terms, it just sounds like they're made up. They probably are, but, you know, there's someone out there who made a bunch of different tricks available for this game, and they did a good job. There's literally almost limitless possibilities for combinations of different tricks.
There really was an unlimited amount of tricks that you could do. And, you know, aside from the fact that you could do all these kinds of tricks, another thing that was cool is each trick had its own little, like, musical riff that indicated the trick that you were doing.
Yes, especially for the level-specific tricks, yeah.
Yeah, it was really cool when you, you know, executed a trick and it would give you, like, a certain sound while they were performing it in the air. And then if you did multiple tricks, you know, you got different musical riffs. You could almost make a beat if you were in the air long enough by doing different tricks.
And each special trick, or not special trick, but like map location, the location-based tricks, were all named something different. Like, I remember hopping over this one little goo river, and it said, just say no to crack, because it was just a small little jump. And as long as you made it, it was like, say no to crack.
Yeah, yeah. And then if you jumped over the goo vats, it was called goo vat. Or Goo Gap.
Yes. And they were numbered.
Yeah. There was also like a different name for other jumps. One at the helipad, it was like, what's the Diliophacy or something like that. It was really cool. Like everything that you jumped over had a name to it. I really liked that.
Yeah, very unique.
Yeah, once again, this game just had a bunch of like its own style to it. And that makes it stand out a little bit. Wasn't just like a plain do this, do that game. It definitely had its own style and it went with it. It wasn't afraid to be itself. I liked it. And, you know, a lot of the elements too, the design, like the menu, you know, you had like a transformer with wires hanging off of it, and you had steel beams and a satellite dish to the side and blinking lights and like a hand sign that you would see at like a crosswalk on the other side with a clearance bar at the top. It's had its own unique style that I really liked. It was very industrial and like early 2000s for sure. It fit the time 100%. The menu had a very cool aesthetic to it. Anybody that plays this game could appreciate the way that it was put together.
One thing I feel like they could have done, because the availability of using the menu at any time to back out of a level and go to another, like the beginning of the chairlift, because, you know, like you had mentioned to me personally that you really liked how this game is grindy, but not that like really grindy, because at any time you don't have to go down the entire length of the course. You can kind of quit at demand, save your game. You don't have to make it to a specific point. So that was kind of a nice conveniency.
Yeah, it gave you a lot of freedom of choice. You could go back to the ski lift and go to a different area. You didn't have to finish necessarily. And then when you were in a challenge, you could just choose to abandon the challenge, or you could choose to restart the challenge at any point in time. It didn't matter if you failed the challenge or if you were partway through it and you wanted to do something, or you think you were about to miss something. You could just pause, restart challenge right at the beginning. You're back again, you know. I liked the choices that they gave you and the freedom that they gave you to do whatever you wanted when you wanted.
I wish the challenge checklist that you only see when you're at the base or the end of a level, I wish that was in the actual menu, because you didn't get to see like what all you had to finish until you got to the end of a level. And unless you're following someone's guide or anything like that, you're sort of stuck on just exploration, which is kind of how the game, as any game, is really meant to be played. It's just sort of you just mess around, do something different. This game really rewards you for being explorative.
Yeah, it definitely does. It gives you a lot of stuff for being explorative. It gives you extra money pickups, extra trick pickups. It also unlocks certain missions because in a couple areas, you can't get to those areas as you're going down unless you actually explore by grinding a rail to get to a spot that's way up high versus where you're usually at the bottom. And, you know, that's part of what you said, the rewarding factor of exploration.
The game is a little, there were times where the game's a little glitchy, but for the most part, it did hold up pretty well. The NPCs like to get in the way a lot. Snow Patrol, Hans and his sister or whatever, sometimes get in the way. And it was kind of funny to knock them down. If you ever did a wipeout, is animation where if you hit something hard enough, or you didn't complete the trick properly and you landed in an unbalanced fashion, you would do a wipeout animation. And on certain objects, if you were to wipe out, you would wipe out endlessly on them until you hit the ground floor where you would start snowboarding. And that could get a little funny at times. You see, like, you're just endlessly bouncing with kind of a unrealistic amount of momentum. You would think you'd been able to recover from it at some point, but that's just how the game works. So, yeah, a little bit of a, I call it a laughing glitch, but really that's all I ever noticed. It wasn't really anything that was kind of game-breaking. I mean, there might have been a couple times I got stuck, where like I couldn't move out of a spot. I got stuck in like a nook. I had to jump, try and get out, and it took me a few tries, maybe like a minute or two to get out, but I got out eventually. And if not, I guess you could always restart the level.
Right.
But yeah, that's pretty much everything about the game.
Well, there was one more thing, and that was the indicator of how far you're into a mission. That yellow slider bar.
The progress bar.
Yeah, the progress bar of your challenge. It doesn't tell you, but there is a predetermined point where you can continue if you were to fail. And it's marked very subtly in that progress bar by a black line. And that pretty much marks where there's a checkpoint in that mission that you can start from if you fail, which I thought was nice. But once again, like there being no tutorial, I wish they would have told you
that
your progress bar does have a checkpoint in it marked by that little black line. I had to figure that out through playing the game. That is what it was for. Because once I crossed that threshold where that black line was, I noticed when I did fail a mission or a challenge, I started back at where that black line was at. So, and once again, if anyone's going to plan on playing this game, just note that ahead of time. That progress bar has a little black line in it, and that indicates a point where you can start from instead of having to restart if you fail. I believe that is pretty much all that we have.
Yeah, that's the full breakdown.
Time for our next segment.
Get ready for X Marks the Spot. The comprehensive look at game secrets and Easter eggs.
Okay, so there isn't really anything as far as Easter eggs goes involving this game. Our research really didn't show anything at all. But there was one thing that I can note that I actually caught, oddly, at the last half of the last mission of the game. I'll actually post pictures to describe this. The texture of the snow in the last area has two faces that you can make out in the actual ground that are very subtle, but you can definitely see them, and once you've seen them, you can make out the details. At the end of one of the ramps, near the end of the level, there is a woman's face in the snow, and then on the opposite side, there's a man's face. It's very visible once you get up on them. If you weren't really paying attention and you got through the level pretty easily, which you're not going to, let me tell you, this is a very difficult mission. It's kind of cool to see that. There also was repeats of these faces as textures later on in the level just before the end as well, which I thought was kind of odd. And as far as we saw, no one has documented this, which is interesting. So probably just like Arctic Thunder, when we reviewed that game, we found the hidden message on the log of that one track select. There was nothing documenting that either. So I guess you can consider this another first time that anyone's ever mentioned a hidden texture or hidden thing in a texture. I thought it was pretty cool. And when I saw it, I sent it to SoftMike. And I'm surprised you didn't see it because you had to restart that same section.
I think I was on like try 35, 38, something like that by the time I actually completed it. And yeah, I guess it just, you know, you never notice things like that when you're focused.
Yeah, I get that because
you sort honestly, of have to pull back in order to see something like that. Like you have to calm down, sort of like, you know, take a break, take a breather, figure out how do I kind of have my easy go moment.
Right.
This mission.
It's got to be a trick. Yes, because you know? I was looking for like a specific line that I could follow maybe. And I was definitely focused like you described. I must have been on probably try 30 or 40 at that point. And like I said, I was looking for a line in the snow to follow that would give me the right trajectory so I didn't have to keep restarting that area. And I kind of noticed a transition from the snow to like a more like a muddy dirt texture. And then I realized, wait, there's a face in that, you know? And the more times I had to restart, because obviously I had a hard time getting through it, I got the chance to more and more notice the faces. I first noticed the woman's face and I was like, well, that's pretty cool. And then without even trying to look for anything else, I found the man's face, which is much harder to see, but it is there. So yeah, it was an interesting find. And like I said, once again, another potentially undocumented find. And if that's the case, I'm going to go ahead and claim it. This is the first time you heard it right here on this show. So definitely look forward to more of us finding things that have never been documented, because I bet you it's already happened twice in just 8 episodes. It'll happen again.
Heck yeah.
We also have cheat codes.
Yeah, so cheat codes wise, these are all done at the title screen, by the way. I should probably mention that. We have a 9.1 million lift points and equipment points.
That's
bonus done by holding back and start at together, pressing Y left trigger, X B right trigger, A right trigger A. You also have, it says alien unlocked, which you can do by holding back and start, pressing Y left trigger, X, B, right trigger, A, right trigger, X. You want to have all levels unlocked from the get-go. Press hold, back, and start together. Press X, X, white button, Y, button, X, Y, Y, X, white button. You have all the challenges finished out at once. Hold back and start. Press Y, left trigger, X, B, right trigger, A, right trigger, Y. You can activate a slow motion mode. Hold back and start, press Y, X, B, left trigger, and then in-game, you hold left and right trigger down, and it will activate slow motion. If you want to unlock all the snowboarders from the get-go, hold back and start, press Y, left trigger, X, B, right trigger, A, right trigger, B. So those are all the get codes for the game. I will mention another thing that's kind of cool. When you finally finish the game and you watch the entire cutscene, you then get told by the narrator guy that he's like, well done for beating the game, now get off your butt and go outside. And
he's like, that was kind of cool.
Or he's like, or just play with one of the 5 new borders that you just unlocked.
it was definitely a fourth wall break. And I would also like to note real quick that the alien unlock, it doesn't unlock an alien as a snowboarder or something like that. What it actually unlocks is challenges 43, 48, 49, and 50, as well as giving you automatically bomb piece number 5. So it essentially unlocks the alien half pipe.
Okay.
Yeah, and the missions that go along with the alien half pipe, which as soon as you get off of the half pipe, you are greeted to going right straight into the mission Apocalypse Cow. Spoiler alert.
All right, I think that's it for the X Marks the Spot section.
Yeah.
Oh my god, he on X Games mode.
Are you ready? Here is the X Games mode. Our personal tales of triumph, adrenaline-pumping gameplay, and sweat-inducing rampages.
Okay, so once again, I believe we share the same X Games mode, for sure.
Definitely, yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, definitely was trying and a frustrating experience nonetheless. Would you like to tell us of your experience?
Yeah. Well, obviously we're referring to the final mission of the game. This mission, you have to basically navigate a very difficult learning curve obstacle course in order to sneak into the headquarters and blow it up with all the bombs you've acquired. And there's a whole lot of everything that you've learned going into it. Maybe minus half piping, but like it's mostly jibbing from start to finish. That's all you're really doing, but it's so quickly timed in certain areas, and that if you don't land on the right spot, it was just very frustrating. And sometimes when you come off of a certain part in the level, you would your board would start to like kind of distort in a way that would throw you off course, and sometimes, depending on where you were at when you jumped, would cause you to crash and you'd have to restart at either the checkpoint line or from the beginning of the challenge, depending where you were. So I think the first section of this track is probably obviously the easiest of it all, but you have to start by jumping up a ramp and grinding along three separately set out rails that led you into the main gate portion of the headquarters. When you jumped down from that point, you then had to make a couple successive jumps over goo or goo gaps, and I think one that was like a pit. You had to make those jumps successfully. Normally what would happen in the game, if you fell into a pit, you would get this logo that pops out at you. That's the Dark Summit logo. And then it would reset you in front of that obstacle instead of having to redo it. You would be set in front of it, and then you would just continue from there. Well, with this mission, if you fall in any of the pits or fall in any of the goo or anywhere that you weren't supposed to be in order to go to finish the level, you had to restart the level. So that was the number one frustration. So anytime you made any mistake, whether you hit a wall on accident, because there were some narrow points where if you jumped, if you didn't have the right angle or right aim, you would literally doom yourself. So I think, you know, that first section, even just getting up to the goo, I think I failed the goo pit in the first section of jumping probably 15 times before I finally got it. But then after that, you then have to make a pretty long jump out to a rail set or hang in the air that then led you to a slope that took you down to another goo pit that had missiles laying in it that you had to then jump and jib perfectly onto them. And then you had to ride those all the way to the end, which would get you to your first checkpoint. That whole first section, the worst parts would probably be the goo pit in the beginning, and then the second goo pit with the missiles. Because you have to make a jump, and if you didn't know your board right, it is very easy to misinterpret or misjudge your jumping distance. So usually when you held the jib button down, you'll kind of zap to like the closest jibbing surface. You don't have to worry about like physics speed and all that. But if you land directly in the center while you're jibbing, it'll continue your momentum up the missile in the correct way. But if you jumped over your missile, there's nothing you can do. I think at least five or six times where I jumped and I either didn't jump far enough or I jumped too far. And there was one time where I jumped, I got one part of the missile. But when I jumped to the next missile, I jumped on a part that was too far away from the next missile that I was doomed. So,
oh, man.
Once I finally got it, which was pure luck, it was pure luck in that instance, getting to that first checkpoint was a godsend because just the amount of redos and retries, I was probably on try 20-something at that point. I was frustrated, but at least I realized, okay, I made it to the checkpoint, but we were only halfway there. So to finish the level, You then have to jump across a series of construction cranes holding rails above minefields, which then take you to certain elevated platforms that have snow on it and a couple mines, which you have to avoid, and then jump to the next set of cranes holding these rails. And then you go to the next platform and so forth, up until you get to the last section where there's a rail that kind of does a swooping angle. This is just one path of this as well. There's technically two different paths you could have gone. I went down the right path. The left path, I don't know how difficult that would have been.
But I don't even know how you could have done it.
The jump. Yeah, the jump would have been difficult.
Yeah, because it was almost impossible.
It was taller than the other one.
And you needed much more momentum to even make it to grind the next rail to take the left path.
Yeah, so I feel like it might have been just almost a joke in a way, but maybe with a different border. Like maybe if you tried like one of the unlocked borders, redoing the end level, you might be able to do it with a different character. Maybe they have a faster board. But I know that landing the rails was extremely difficult. Because sometimes you would hit the center of the rail where the crane's rope would be hanging down, and that would cause you to do your wipeout animation. But there were also times where you hit that, and it didn't cause you to have your wipeout animation, and you actually jibbed correctly to the rail, but then when you jumped off to get to the next platform, your angle was thrown off, or you didn't have enough speed built up, and you hit a mine, and you had to be perfect.
Yeah.
In order to complete this. And I think I literally probably had at least 35, 40 tries in this last section, trying over and over and over again. And I was extremely fuming. But I would say adrenaline was always pumping. Like I said, I was every time focused intently on completing that challenge so badly that it was like encoded in my blood. I had to finish it before the night was over. And when I got lucky and I landed on the last set of rails that take you to the end of the level, it was complete luck that I got on the one that basically, as I put it, confirms that you're beating the level. Like, there's no other way you can fall off the map. There's no other traps, no landmines. You're basically a straight shot to the last gate. And that was a happy, surreal moment. That feeling of positivity that I finally conquered something that was challenging me to the point where I was getting sick of it. But I finally did it. So for me, that was my ice game moment.
Very good. Honestly, I don't really think there's much for me to say because I shared the exact same moment, really. And that last mission is definitely the crown jewel of this game, really. It showcases what you've been playing the entire game to be able to do, and that is grind the rails, which it's a pretty difficult mechanic to master and get proficient at because this level requires you to do nothing but that pretty much, and you have to execute it perfectly. So with the stage, the way it started out was pretty difficult starting out. You had to grind three rails off the bat and then jump over two big gaps, which had a very short tolerance that you could come up short on the other side. So not only did your momentum have to be perfect, your jump have to be perfect, and your grinds have to be perfect, you had to be able to steer between the different areas because everything was offset to go along with that. So it definitely was a challenging stage. It took me quite a few tries to get past the first half, and I wasn't even sure how I was going to be able to do that. But once I got past that, you know, it went into the next section where I found those faces in the snow. But aside from that, you know, I was faced with the new challenge of doing the even harder last half. And God, I must have taken 30 to 40 tries trying to do that half alone. So definitely a challenge. If you plan on playing this game, just know that learning how to grind rails and switch back and forth between multiple rails in one line is going to need to become a strong suit if you want to finish this game, which actually you could finish the game pretty quickly. You can get about 60 to 70% of your progression within, I'd say, an hour and a half to 2 hours. And then you could probably even 100% this game in probably three to five hours. So in a good long day of playing, you could easily start to finish this game with skipping, you know, some missions and just playing the story straight up. So definitely is a challenging game in the end, and it will help you hone your skills as you progress. So just be ready. That's all we have for X Games mode.
Let's get X-rated, where we rank the game based on our evaluation of 10 core gaming elements.
Okay, so we're going to kick off X-rated with you, Soft Mike.
All right, for Dark Summit, we'll start off with our graphics score. I gave this game a 6 out of 10. Ooh. I felt like there were some pretty cool graphics in this game. It wasn't crazy realistic or anything like that. There were some animation issues, like the ending cutscene, for instance. For some reason, they didn't animate her fingers. The rest of the game kind of made up for it. There were some pretty cool viewpoints and things that you could do that I felt like graphically this game actually kind of looked pretty. Difficulty score. I gave this game a 5 out of 10. I felt like difficulty-wise, this game had a very easy balance overall for most challenges. Once you figured out the game, of course. But the last few missions really kind of put a whole different perspective into the game, and in such a way that it has to boost the score up, that it becomes so hard that you actually get a decent challenge. And I feel like it's fair and average. I feel like anybody that really wanted to play and beat the game could do it. The AI, oh man, this is the game's worst point. The AI got a 2 out of 10. I felt like the game's AI was definitely not programmed for anything remotely autonomous, but it was definitely all scripted. Pretty much where anywhere you went, the NPC AIs were going as well. So it didn't matter what it was, but typically they were crashing, which was just funny. I think that's really what the point was. It wasn't done to be smart or intelligent. The game was meant, sort of, it had this humorous undertone. So the AI is kind of being dumb on purpose. I feel like that was sort of the developer's goal. Single player. This game got a 7 out of 10. The single player experience is actually pretty enjoyable. It has its issues overall, but for the most part, anybody that sits there, I think, would enjoy this game start to finish. It's a short game, short story, if you will, but there has a charm in it that kind of enables the feeling of wanting to keep going. Kind of want to finish it, see it through. Multiplayer. This is something I didn't get to really experience much with, but looking into what it offers, single player experience is much better overall. So multiplayer for me got a 5 out of 10. I feel like it sort of just offered some plain Jane sort of modes in it. Something to kind of keep the interest of anybody that wants to play multiplayer. You get a couple of different tracks to play with, and some different goal-based objectives depending on the mode you want to play. That's really it. If it had co-op or something, I guess, more involving, I feel like it would have got a higher score. Design. This game got an 8 out of 10 for me. I feel like this game had a very good design overall. Track layout was very impressive. Everything was different. There was no one path to complete it. Linear and overall, path choice and whatnot, but you always had to explore first. So the idea that you had sort of freedom to sort of do whatever challenges you wanted and what paths you wanted to take was an excellent design choice. Overall game look and like the menu and all that, the credits, very cool to kind of have that secret agent feel to it. And obviously the obvious point to having humor, this lighthearted humor underneath it, comic mischief, that was actually very well done and executed very well. Controls, 10 out of 10. I felt like this game's control scheme was excellent.
Wow.
Really was blown away the possibilities that every button you knew, once you knew it, you knew what buttons did what, and there was really nothing you'd forget or accidentally press. You knew exactly what each button and which dick was doing. Features. This game was a little lackluster. I gave it 4 out of 10. Besides the single-player story and really the limited multiplayer, there really wasn't much stuff the game presented. It sort of just kind of threw you in the game. You just was expected to do tricks. You're given some customization with Naya, but the only Naya, which is kind of a little bit of an undersight. I feel like that would have been a much better executed way had they unlocked all the borders at once and just sort of played whoever you wanted instead of having one single protagonist. They had to complete the game in order to unlock the rest of them just to play the game and go over again with the different characters. Replayability. I gave this game a 6 out of 10. As I just mentioned, really the only reason you want to come back and play this game is to try out a different border or just play through the old tracks with Naya to sort of just kind of play around. Really, there's not much point to, if you want to start a new game and try it over again, do it with a different border. It's the same story, same concept, same everything, just with a different person. So, really, this game doesn't have much to offer there. I'd say this is a game you could maybe come back to in 5 years or whatever, and maybe try beating it again. That's really what you want to do. Soundtrack. I think this game, by all games so far, has the best soundtrack. 4 out of 10. I think this game didn't have any underlying issues with how sound affected the gameplay. Whenever there was a tense moment, like a chase, the music ramped up and it had dynamic feel to it. Even though it wasn't dynamic, but it always felt like you were being chased. It really felt like you had to kind of push your limits. It accompanied the feeling, the euphoria, very well. And most of the music all around was very comfortable. Nothing, like I said, overbearing in any way. So, in tally, final score of this game gets a 57, grade C.
All right. That was a very interesting scoring. Like, definitely some twists for me from what your feedback was during our time playing. Yeah, definitely a little taken back. I would say I agree on most every front with you. And I'm just surprised at the outcome of some of these grades. The 10 out of 10 was pretty crazy, but I mean, you do have a point. So, yeah, let's jump right in. I, for graphics, gave a 4 out of 10. I thought that textures were a little lacking on detail, and a lot of it was muddy and just kind of blended together, as well as some of the assets that were placed in the game were kind of placed just there. And didn't have as much uniformity and polish as they could have had. So it definitely hurt the scoring of the graphics. Difficulty, I give a 6. I felt it had a good balance, but it wasn't great. It was really easy for most of the game, like you stated, and then it got real hard. And then some challenges were just cheap, so it would just simply take a couple of restarts to really get the right RNG that you needed for you to be able to pass the challenge, because some of them, especially the army boots one, where Naya yells out, "Your mother wears army boots," to the slow patrol guy, and you have to go through that minefield at the start of the mission. Like, 3 seconds in, if that, he could run into you, and then you fail the mission, right off the bat, if it starts out that way. But a couple of restarts later, or maybe one later, you start where you can actually get a head start on him and complete the mission. So, you know, it's not necessarily difficulty, it's just like the random start of the mission in most cases, or the challenge. AI, I give a 6 as well. It had a pretty good path detection. They were pretty good at finding you and tackling you, keeping up with you for the most part. One thing I noticed was, it was hilarious. I was actually laughing while playing when I had to escape from or beat Chief O'Leary to the bottom of the mountain. He was programmed in such a way to where he couldn't be tripped up or fall or be stopped by an obstacle. In that way, I mean, I would run into him and trip him multiple times. And what he would do is he would do a full front flip with the same momentum that he had and basically in one frame appear back on his skis from doing a partial front flip, which it was incredibly funny. If you witnessed it multiple times as you go down that mountain in like the 6 or 7 minutes that you have to do it, he's constantly running into objects and essentially falling, but not falling. And it's just that tuck and roll that he does. That's the falling animation is one of the funniest things you'll see happen multiple times. So, yeah, the AI, it was programmed to be a little cheap in that sense as well. But for the most part, it did a good job of keeping up with you, tracking you down, and once again, taunting you. Like in Munch's Odyssey, where the Sligs or whatnot would taunt you. They had taunts and they could trash talk. So I thought that was kind of cool. Single player gets a 6. I liked the story. It wasn't told great, but it was there. And it added an element of mystery. And it made the game interesting. Apart from the fact that you had the snowboarding and tricks, you also had the story that you had to uncover. So it gave you something to do and something to work for. And I appreciated that. It had a good quality and a little bit above average single player because of that. Multiplayer, I gave a 3. It was pretty lackluster the one time I did play it. You have 3 modes to select, and the music doesn't ramp up or do anything special. It stays mellow the whole time. And basically all you got to do is 3 different things, and that was go down the mountain and compete with the next person to smash the most objects on your way down. And it's a predetermined course. You don't get to choose your level, which I thought was eh. You know, you just play whatever level that each one of the challenges is based on, and that's it. You don't have a choice, which I didn't really care for. One cool thing I'll backtrack on was the character selection. You were able to play as Chief O'Leary, Ranger Dick, the Slow Patrols, Hans, or Jennifer. It had a pretty broad character select for the multiplayer, but it didn't add anything to the game, really. It just gave you the ability to play someone else that you can't play in the main game. But going back to what you can do, the second option that you had was to essentially just do a race down the mountain, which I think it was starting from the second level. So it was basically a 3-minute race, and it didn't even go all the way to the base of the mountain. It stopped at like the hill just before the base. Really lackluster. Just abruptly stopped. And then you also have the last option, which is just to do tricks. And that's on the level pipeline, I believe. It really just, it didn't do much for me. It was kind of boring. It wasn't very competitive. And I don't think it would matter who I played with, because it seemed like an afterthought to add the multiplayer to the game. And it just lacked design. I gave a 7. It had a lot going for it. I liked the layout. The game was designed very well. I probably could have given this a little bit higher of a score, honestly. But there's things that dragged it down, and that was partially due to the cutscenes and the fact that there was no tutorial. You kind of just got thrown into the game and left to fend for yourself. I didn't appreciate that very much. The design just lacked in a couple of spots that hurt its score, but overall was executed very well. The menu layout was pretty cool. The stylization of the game was really cool. Just being left to fend for yourself, though, was a real downer, because they laid everything else out for you. So why couldn't they give you the ability to learn the controls before setting you free? I think there was an opportunity missed there. And it's a big opportunity missed, because going into the game, like you had mentioned also, you didn't know how to grind a rail. And you had to constantly retry the first time that you had to grind a rail, because you had no idea. Nothing was ever given to you as far as knowing how to do it. So it was very frustrating at first, until I had to scour the controls, and there wasn't even a controller diagram. I had to go through what controls did what, and there wasn't even a clear indication of what the control was. I just kind of had to guess. Definitely a big oversight. It does change things, mainly because being able to enjoy a game and even play it is to know the controls. Controls, on the other hand, I gave an 8. They were done very well. I kind of rated them a little lower, though, mainly because they weren't always responsive. And when it came to certain areas, it was really tough to maintain control of your character. So that hampered it, especially in the last mission, where for some reason, seemingly, you'd get locked on your course when you jumped from a rail grind to a platform. You would get stuck, and you would lose momentum and fail because you couldn't jump to the next area. Or you would get stuck going straight, and you would run into a bomb, and that would cause you to lose all of your momentum, and you couldn't jump. So you would fail again because of that. It was just a part of that being the controls just seem to not work sometimes because of the way that the game's physics worked, maybe, or something. Transitioning off of a trick to going back to playing the game, you know, with full control. I'm not sure exactly what caused that, but yeah, that definitely hurt the controls for me. I actually found myself getting very frustrated and very angry and shouting expletives at the game because of it. Features, I gave a 7. It offered a good amount, honestly, for what this game was. It offered a good amount to go through and enjoy. You know, you had a pretty good level select. You had a pretty good amount of tricks that you could do. Customization wasn't great. It's just like, here's these items. We're not going to tell you what they do, but if you like them, use them. And it was only with one character, but just gave you a lot in a way to do because you had all that freedom, the features of the menu to give you the freedom that you had to switch between levels on the fly or to restart a challenge on the fly or to even abandon a challenge on the fly. Or you wanted to switch from the challenge you were on, you could just back out. It was that easy. You know, I really liked that. So I'd say features flourished with the freedom that you were given, but that was the main factor. Replayability, I gave a 2. This game really has nothing to offer you once you finished it. There's not really much to come back to. It's great to enjoy from the first get-go, but after you've completed the story, the multiplayer isn't great, and the main story, like I said, it doesn't offer you anything to keep you coming back once you've finished it. So it has a very low probability of being picked up again, unless you played it enough for it to grow on you, and you've found a way to have some kind of a nostalgia kick, possibly, but that's about it. Soundtrack, I will give a 4. Actually, surprisingly good, and an original one at that. With the way that it ramped up, if you got chased, or if something was going on, or if you were in a different level, the music did change dynamically, and it really set the mood very well. I liked it. It took you away, and it put you where you were. It was a nice escape. And that pretty much wraps it up for me. My final score came out to a 53 and also a grade C.
Heck yeah.
So we were pretty close on our ratings, really. With that, I will be putting this game in spot number 4, right above Arctic Thunder and right below 4x4 EVO 2.
All right. I'm going to put mine in spot number 3 between Oddworld Munch's Odyssey being above it and Arctic Thunder being below it.
Okay. The determining factor for me putting it below Arctic Thunder was my desire to come back to the game.
All right, which, yeah.
Yeah, Arctic Thunder, you know, it has those epic race scenes, you know, and it had fun multiplayer. I would be more likely to come back to that game, hands down. You know, that was the big deal with me. Like, will I come back to this game? You know, versus how much did I enjoy it while I was playing it? And the fact that I would come back to Arctic Thunder, even though I enjoyed Dark Summit more as a game because of what it had to offer. So Arctic Thunder essentially would be better.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah, the reason why I put it above Arctic Thunder was because, for me, comparing the two games side by side, there was more freedom in Dark Summit. And I feel like having that freedom and the diversity, not that Arctic Thunder isn't diverse, I felt like Dark Summit had more diversity, much more than Arctic Thunder. That, as from the player's perspective, I feel like it was very enjoyable that there were, even like to this point, there's tricks and things or areas, things that I never did tricks over that I don't even know exist yet because I've not completed a trick over it. So that's kind of where I put it.
Totally agreeable. The games have their own reason for what makes them great. The games have their own thing that make them great in their own way. And I think they definitely deserve their position. I'm excited to see how this list expands in the future, like what knocks these games that are currently where they are out of their place. It's definitely going to be cool to see where these wind up, especially the couple of them that, you know, we've found and have never played or heard of that we absolutely loved. So, yeah, definitely still going to rag on Air Force Delta Storm. It belongs at the bottom. It will stay there unless somehow we find another game that's worse.
Yeah, there's probably some stinking pile of crap out there, I'll tell you.
Oh, there's got to be. 1,037 games. We're bound to find a couple more when we found one in our second episode. So, yeah.
All right. What's our next game or games, shall I say?
Well, episode 9, we will be reviewing Mad Dash Racing and Fusion Frenzy. This will be another doubleheader.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to miss out on that.
No. It's going to be exciting. Two essential party games, really. So I'm excited to get these underway and experience them with you and a couple other people for sure.
Heck yeah.
Well, we hope that you enjoyed listening as much as we enjoyed playing and reviewing this game. Once again, if anyone has any experience with this game or any kind of nostalgia, write in and let us know. If we missed anything or if there's anything you'd like to add, we'd love to hear from you. We appreciate you for listening, and we also appreciate your ears. Until next time, I'm Excalibur.
And I'm your co-host, Soft Blank.
And we'll see you in the next one. Hello, loyal listeners. Excalibur here. Thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a supporter by going to our Patreon and pledging a couple bucks. Not only does this grant you exclusive access to early episodes and other content only available to supporters, but you also get to know you're making a difference by helping keep the lights on so that we can keep providing excellent content for you. Also consider joining the OG Xbox modding community on Facebook, where you can find anything you may need or want from the most trustworthy and quality-forward bunch of innovators keeping this amazing console alive to today. You can also become a part of the action by submitting a game for us to review via 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you may listen. Also consider liking and sharing our social media. You can find us on Twitter via our Twitter handle, Thinkbox Podcast, or on Facebook at Thinking Inside the Box. You can also write into us via email at thinkinginsidetheboxpodcast@outlook.com. Until the next time, thank you for listening, thank you for your patronage, and we will see you in the next one.